Hello.
Hi. My name is Bernie.
And my name is Yasmin.
And you're listening to the Fashion Football Podcast. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for listening.
Yes. We just wanted to come on here before the episode starts to let you know to give us a review and to subscribe.
Definitely subscribe.
If you didn't hear it for the first time, subscribe.
We'll say it again. Subscribe.
And make sure to follow us on our socials. That is at
Yasisai on Instagram.
And King Bernie with two E's at the end. And of course, the podcast page, which is the Fashion Football Podcast. We made it easy for you. And as always, everything will be in the description
below.
Right.
So we're making it hella easy for y'all. Just click the description down below. Once you're done listening to this, get us on all the socials.
Yes. And give us a follow. And come join the family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it. Bye.
Bye, y'all.
Hope you enjoy. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Fashion Football Podcast. It's your girl, Bernie. Unfortunately, Yasmin couldn't be here today, but it's just going to be me, so we'll still have some fun. Today, I have a guest. I've been following her on Instagram. I really like her content. I like, you know, what she's showing online and her values and stuff, so I wanted to have a conversation with her. Her name is Debbie. Welcome, Debbie.
Thank you, Bernie. I am so happy to be here. I have been asked to introduce myself, so I will.
Yeah.
I am a Vancouver blogger, or so they say, influencer. Still a term that I'm coming to terms with, but I prefer content creator, I think, the most. I am full-time since the beginning of the year, and before that, I actually went through a random bunch of jobs in the corporate finance world, and I think that me becoming a full-time content creator over the last year has really helped me to realign with values that I kind of had lost along the way that were really important to me back in school. So yeah, I'm excited to share a little more about that story, I guess, today.
Oh, so you just piqued my interest. What were some of the values that you felt like you lost working in the corporate world that you feel like now that you're in the creative lane, it's starting to kind of creep back in?
Yeah, definitely. That was a big one, was social justice. And as many of us know, that became really prominent in social media in like 2020, with all the pandemic and BLM, obviously, and just like Asian hate crimes. And being Asian myself, that was obviously pretty hard to take. And so I think a lot of us also became more aware of how our actions in our own country affect so many others in other countries, especially with regard to the fast fashion industry.
Mm-hmm.
And that became something I was able to ignore for many years. But being stuck at home, just like reevaluating my life, I think I slowly realized I couldn't say, I couldn't just like turn my eyes away from it. And those were just some of the things like sustainability, social justice. I think those were the biggest things that I realized I had a lot of interest in back in high school and university, and like gender equality, just all these things. And I think in the corporate world, I just got sucked up into earning my money, kind of being like partying, you know, just like having status in that circle. And I was just so rushed all the time in everyday life that I just never had time to sit down and really think about what I was doing with my life.
That's actually interesting. And I feel like people are not necessarily honest with their journey of like the social justice thing, if that makes sense. So I feel like that's really like a good point. It's like a very like vulnerable to say, because like I feel like we all want to always be like, oh, I'm a good person and I've always cared, but like truly honestly, like sometimes some of us can't really afford to care, you know what I mean? Like I grew up with parents who, like, you know, they're immigrants, so it's like they come to a country, they have to, you know, go to work, they're studying, they have a family and things like that. So like politics was never something that they really would think about to like vote, and that was never something that they like instilled in me. And now that they're older, they're starting to be more like, oh shit, I actually have to pay attention. But I'm also glad that they kind of were always kind of like, you're in this country, you're a citizen, like you need to be aware of what's going on. Like, I may not be able to do it because I just don't have the time and energy, but like that's something that you should like have. And I think it's kind of similar working in the corporate space because it's such a draining space.
Yeah, totally. I've been there. Yeah, I actually can relate a lot to that, as I also had immigrant parents, and they brought me here in the 90s. And I think that they tried their best to assimilate, right, and fit in. So they kept their heads down, just trying to make sure we have a life and caring for our well-being. And while there was a lot of like racism and trauma that happened during that time, especially to my older brothers, I think they just told us to just like learn good English and go to school and get good jobs. And that is totally like understandable from their standpoint. But now both myself and my brother and siblings, like my two brothers, they become much more, they've realized that we need to take a stand for things that matter.
Yeah, for sure. I think a lot of us are kind of in that space too of like, it's not just about being grateful to like live here. It's also like, I shouldn't be living on survival mode because like, you know, like a lot of our parents, they had it very bad back home. And then there's so much like intersection and so much nuances to that conversation. So how was your transition between going from corporate to the influencing world or more creative field? And how did like your parents perceive that, or your community perceive that?
Yeah, so my parents are very much very traditional, and they did not take kindly to the idea of it. But I'm actually very lucky because my older brother did that first. He usually forged the path for like the rest of us, but he is a writer, and he went to school for business at first, and then he switched over to English, which is a weird thing to do. And my parents were not happy. So, but I think every time he did something, it obviously made it easier for the rest of us to do it. So anyways, even though my parents were very proud that I had a stable corporate job, they eventually understood that I needed to be more creative with my life. And I'd never had intended to be in the corporate finance world. That was something really random that happened to me after university. So I told them that basically this was just myself taking a risk, but I think it was well worth it. And so far it really has been. But the transition was not too bad because I was actually home a lot, right? So when I was working from home in 2020, I had felt really isolated already, because I was working previously in office and I had a lot of great relationships with my coworkers. But then with the pandemic, I got cut off from all of that. And all these various changes in the company just resulted in me just saying, I can't take this anymore. And I just don't feel like I'm doing anything here of meaning. And nothing was just satisfying in me anymore. So I started spending more time on my social media and actually building a stronger community. And that's what led me to actually getting better campaigns and getting paid more, until I realized I made about like 12,000 in 2020. And before that, I made like nothing, like peanuts. So when I realized that, wow, if I put my mind towards it and I was actually able to make that much money within a short period of time, I could totally do this full time. And I actually had a certain amount of confidence in myself, which I'm actually like pretty impressed that I could like go into that and just be like, yeah, I'm going to do this. I just had some faith in myself, I guess, and luckily not ill-placed. And I quit my job at the end of the last year. And then I finally officially left it in the beginning of January. And because those months are so slow for influencers in general, like from January to like March, I had such a great time just resetting and just taking time to really set up a strong morning routine and like meditating, just journaling, planning, and all these things I never had time to do before, going for walks, listening to podcasts, reading more again. And so this transition, I would say, was actually not that bad. And I still was in contact with a lot of friends when I could see them, when I was able to. So yeah, long story short, it was not too bad.
Yeah. How did your coworkers react to you leaving and going to a whole different field?
Yeah, actually, it's funny. A lot of my coworkers already knew that I was really into this. And it was like kind of a joke where they would always make fun of me for like being so active on social media. But a lot of them could tell that I was kind of wasting away in that role. It was this admin customer service role. And a lot of them just saw, like my closer friends at least, saw that I was not happy. And it was really wasting any talent that I had, because I think a lot of them know that I'm pretty like chatty, like positive in general person. And they could see that this job was just not taking like my true talents and doing anything with it. So a lot of them were really supportive. So, and I actually met up with a bunch of them recently, and they were all like really happy that I did what I did. And they're actually honestly thinking about whether they could also strike out on the self-employed path one day. And I totally encourage them to do that if they can.
Yeah. Did you have any people who did not support your decision to go into influencing?
I had like a couple who were more, they're very risk adverse people. And I honestly understand their point of view just because they themselves come from a really traumatic background where they didn't have stability. So but even then I kind of just convinced them I had a lot of reasons for why I wanted to do it. And plus, like, even if I quit, I could still get a job again, you know, like my company was willing to take me back. So honestly, I was very blessed. Like I was really, I didn't burn any bridges. And I know that even when I left, people asked like, oh, is Debbie coming back? And then some even asked if I had a job. Sorry, they said that I could get another job there. Like there was a job posting. So yeah, just long story short, I left on really good terms. And I think that's really important. If you are leaving a corporate job or just a job, try not to burn bridges unless it was really toxic. And it wasn't too toxic. So
That's a really good point, because I feel like a lot of us are trying to leave places. But I think it's like it's a good in case to like have some sort of backup plan. I know that as like me being a creative, like I do struggle a lot with imposter syndrome. And I couldn't imagine like the anxiety that I would have like leaving a job that even though I didn't necessarily love it, like the environment is good, like I like the people, I'm making money. How did you deal with that, like through your transition dealing with imposter syndrome and then reaching out to more brands to you know, to ask for more money or to start posting more, sharing that story with your audience?
It's very interesting. I think like I definitely had that imposter syndrome for a bit, but I think I follow a lot of creatives who are very open with their journey, and that's why I've been very open. Like it slowly started to realize that hey, I should be open with my story because it's something I'm sure other people would learn from and really enjoy like hearing. But in the beginning, it was a bit hard. The first few months were, I kind of just had to believe that things would go well and that brands would come. Because in general, I don't really pitch much to brands. Like brands are the ones who come to me. What did start to change is that I started using influencer platforms. So that's when I started to be more active in terms of like applying for campaigns that were on these platforms. And my favorite one, I've already mentioned this in a latest post of mine, is a hashtag paid. They are a Canadian-based one. And I think they're based in Toronto. And they are great. Like, I think I got my best brand collabs from them. So anyone who's interested, I would recommend it. But yeah, I had to kind of definitely swallow that imposter syndrome, because when I got bigger collabs like Amazon and IKEA and like these other ones that was Samsung Home, like I definitely didn't feel like my photography was good enough. And I felt like, crap, am I going to make content that they'll accept? And the fact that I got through it and everyone said good things, I was like, okay, like I was able to get through that. I can get through much more, right? Even though I have room to improve.
Yeah, of course. Like it's important to like, I'm learning to give myself grace in the work that I do, because like people who know me will tell you, like, how sometimes I get so obsessive, and mm-hmm. I didn't realize, like, how much of a problem it was until I did my website with my mm-hmm. portfolio, and I was finding myself, like, zooming in to be like, oh shit, like, I forgot to take off that pin, or, like, that pin is mm-hmm. visual in the picture, like, no one's gonna see the fucking pin, like, yeah, that's just true. You know, but I'd just be, like, so obsessive with it, and trying to find a reason to, like, not like my work, when, like, in the grand scales of things, like, first of all, no one is zooming in to find a pin. Mm-hmm. Second of all, it looks good, like, you're just being nitpicky, and mm-hmm. I know that so many creatives are, like, as hard, if not more, mm-hmm. onto the work than me, and I feel like it's even more harder when you're getting paid for the work, because it's, like, am I worth that much money? Mm-hmm. Sometimes yeah. I deal with that. I know that you talk a lot about, like, asking for more money on your platform and things mm-hmm. like that. How mm-hmm. did you feel, like, how did you go to a place where you feel like your work is valuable to get mm-hmm. like that much
yeah.
money?
It took a while. So I think I've shared before that at the beginning of the year, I took on brand collabs that were only $250. And I thought that was, like, not great, but it was good enough. And I did other ones just for $500. And I thought that was pretty good. I was like, wow, that's already, like, pretty darn great. And those from, like, Crabtree and Evelyn brands. And then it was pretty slow. So I pretty much took whatever I got. Mm-hmm. But I think when I started getting bigger brands, like, the biggest wake up call was probably Amazon and IKEA. So Amazon, I normally wouldn't work with them because they're not the greatest, mm-hmm. but the reason I worked with them is because they were supporting Canadian ethical and sustainable designer labels. So that was the fact that I was working with a small designer from Vancouver was actually, like, really cool. But I think I pretty much set my rates to them, and they accepted them right away. And then I realized after consulting other people that I should have asked for way more money. And mm-hmm. because they were also doing those same campaigns, and they were like, yeah, I asked for more and I got it. I was like, and I realized, shoot, like, I really have a lot to learn here. So I think that I started to really research more about usage rights and just general base rates, and starting to educate myself. And that's when I started to realize that, wow, I was really undercharging, because compared to other creatives or creators, I guess, if I looked at my engagement rate and even just, like, the quality of, like, the copy that I write and the images I try to, like, present, my quality was actually really good. And I think that I was kind of, like, downplaying how valuable that was, because the more I started to research and educate myself, I realized that brands are really paying for not just the your pictures or, like, whatever, they're paying for the voice that you have on your platform, and that's valuable to them. So I realized that I need to consider all the time and effort that I put into my platform, which was, like, years. So mm-hmm. some girls I've talked to, they've been doing this for maybe, like, 2 years max, and they were talking about how they were like, how come you get all these brand collabs and I don't? And I mentioned that, well, I'm sure they're coming your way. They're doing great. But I've also been doing this for, like, over 4 years. And I have, like, a lot of experience. And I clearly am a very stable person where I've been doing this consistently for 4 years. And I think brands take that into consideration. Mm-hmm. And there's just a lot of variables that are hard to pinpoint. Like, I could state that it would take a long time to go over. But brands really do. If they're using PR agencies who know what they're doing, then they really go through things like that with a fine-tooth comb. If it's the brand themselves, then I have a lot. They usually don't know as much, to be honest. And that's why they try to, like, get away with just paying you peanuts or nothing at all.
Oh, that's an interesting point.
It is.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. The little tip is that if a brand directly reaches out to you, it's less likely they're going to pay you, like, a lot. If they're using a PR agency that works with influencers a lot, there's more likely chance that you're going to be able to negotiate something that's more feasible.
I know that some content creators or influencers who are with a agency do get paid more, then they would be able to negotiate, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And that's probably because they are having to pay the agency a cut of the commission.
Yeah. Have you thought about going with the agency?
No, because I actually have talked to another girl who's a local, and she has been doing this full time for years now, like longer than me, and she gets really good ones. And she's like a, she used to be a yoga, but now she's more like lifestyle in general and a mommy blogger. So she told me about her experience with doing, being with, managed by agency, and it wasn't positive. And while I have, like, it's only one person who said that, honestly, I don't think I've seen anybody doing that great that I know of with an agency, because the ones that I know that were managed by agencies, like, I'm not very impressed by the collabs they do. And yeah. The girl that I talked with, she actually said that the agency she worked with, they didn't even bring her any campaigns. She brought them the campaigns. And then they tried to negotiate, but they were way too aggressive, and they ended up scaring off a lot of the brands. And another thing they did was they tried to, which I get from their perspective, but they tried to get the brand to work with their other influencers on their roster too.
Mm.
And it was too aggressive. And in the end, she dropped them because they were not helping her at all.
Interesting. I feel like a lot of people, like, they see, at least I'm starting to have the behind the scenes of what's going on, like, from other people, but it's like, you, the everyday person would never would have guessed that that was like a thing, you know, like when you see the agency, like, you think it's, you know, probably like rainbows and bunnies and whatever, but it's not necessarily true. So I feel like that's why it's important to, for people to share, like, their experience and their stories, because, and not stop gatekeeping, because, like,
it would
avoid so many things. And I feel like that's why I like your platform so much, is because you're not, like, you'll just be like, okay, this is what you should know. And I feel like it helps the consumer, but it also, I think, helps people to understand, like, why is influencing your content creation even a job? Because still people don't understand what that is.
Yeah, for sure. That's actually interesting. I have an upcoming campaign. I can't mention too much about it. And this was actually, like, my best campaign ever, like, in terms of pay. Mm-hmm. And it's a local tech brand, and that's all I can say. But basically, it talks about trends for the upcoming year. And it does, it actually has done a ton of research from, like, thousands and thousands of marketers and experts in the industry. And they've all talked about how social media is just becoming more and more important for marketing, more than, like, print ads or, like, other, like, TV ads or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And because they have more intimate access to customers. And therefore, all these marketers are actually planning to up their spend for social media, and not just Instagram or Facebook, the more traditional platforms. They really want to... start using more non-traditional ones like TikTok, Pinterest, Snapchat even. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be sharing much more on that in my upcoming posts. But basically, it shows that content creators have more opportunity than ever to make it. And therefore, I feel like more of us should be educated so that we can actually advocate for ourselves instead of being taken advantage of, like so many girls are.
Yeah, and I feel like also when we're having honest conversations about, like, what's actually happening behind the scenes, it's not just going to be, like, content creators are advocating, but it's also going to be the consumers who are following these people who are also going to advocate. Because I've seen so many times where, like, influencers spoke about how, you know, they were supposed to be paid by X campaign and whatever, and they talked about it, and they were honest about what happened, and then you see their platform or their audience kind of calling out the brand for doing the person wrong. So and I get the reason why people don't really talk about, like, the behind the scenes of content creation, because there's, like, a fantasy that's being created where it's like you have this perfect little life. But I feel like part of that has created some sort of stigma around that type of line of work.
It's not authentic, right?
Yeah. So I'm sure, obviously, you being full-time, I'm sure, like, whenever you're like, hey, like, I'm a content creator, like, you probably get the eyes, because I get it when I when I say that I'm a stylist.
Oh, yeah,
Can you kind of talk about the stigma that is around content curation? Why do you think there is one?
I think that there is a lot of falsehoods that are propagated about influencers. And my favorite one is Emily in Paris. I'm sure many people watched it, but literally while I thought it was a fun show, I could not stop cringing. Every time I saw her post a boomerang with her croissant and somehow get 20,000 followers in like 3 weeks. And I was just like, no, that's not how it works. And I ranted to like everybody I knew who was a fellow like influencer, right? And the fact that they make it seem like, oh, you just post a picture and then you're good to go. And just make it like look cute or something, that made me so angry, because I just think it just shows more what people think that we do, and that's couldn't be further from the truth, especially the same as you as a stylist. And another thing is that influencers in the wild, like that account where they show these influencers doing stupid things in public and then make fun of them, those are like other stigmas that people have like kind of promoted about influencers that are so hurtful and just like abusive, right? Because that's just not okay. A lot of these influencers are maybe doing something a little like out there, but still they're following their passions. And what are you doing? You're just like belittling someone else, like, right? But I think that what has helped me in that circumstance personally is that I'm very open with what I do, and usually I surround myself with a good group of people. Like anyone who is a bit of a naysayer, like, I don't know, I have really good network in terms of friends, like both non-bloggers and bloggers. And my non-blogger friends just like know me, and they know that I've like, I'm a creative, and that I need to do something that uses those creative sides of my brain. And when they see what I post, they get it, apparently, because a lot of them are like, yeah, I get why you are doing this. Like, I don't just share about fashion. I share about like things that are really important to me, like how I'm learning more about sustainability and about social justice and things that really do matter and that should matter to everyone. And I think that's why I feel proud of what I post, and that if anyone looks at it, I wouldn't be like embarrassed, because I think a lot of people say that feel embarrassed if their coworkers saw what they do, but I personally don't. And actually a lot of my old work coworkers follow me, and they like, I can see them looking at every single like story. So I know they like stalk me, to be honest, but they, and they're not the young ones. They're like the older ones. So like the ones who are like senior executives literally followed me on there, and like they watch all of my stories.
That's so sad.
It's weird, right? And then like I'm almost like, I got used to it. I'm like, whatever, they can watch my stories. If that, like, I bet they just kind of want to know if I'm like gonna fall on my face with this after I left the company. But things have gotten better, and I have not fallen on my face. I'm doing quite well, actually. So even though, yeah, I definitely feel like people thought it was weird what I was doing, I feel like that it's my work stands for itself, speaks for itself, and I feel proud of what I'm doing.
I love talking to you, because you like gas yourself up in the slightest way. I'm doing quite well, actually. Like, I want to get to the level where I talk and that's how I speak, and it's like so smooth. Like, you didn't take a pause, you didn't take a break. It's just so smooth selling. I love that for you. You know what you mentioned about people making fun of influencers? I just thought about how, like, a lot of you really, really big influencers do be embarrassing themselves, in the sense that, like, we've all hear, like, these stories of ex.
Oh, my gosh.
I didn't have to go too much into it. She knew what I was getting at. But we all hear stories of, like, X, Y, and Z person who, you know, their intimate conversation with other people, or like they are low-key racist or low-key this or low-key that, whatever it is. So I think, like, when people think about influencers, they think about these people, first because obviously they have so many numbers and things like that. So they don't think about like Debbie, who posts about sustainable fashion and about how she likes to plan her stuff because she's she loves organization. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, I get the stigma from that perspective where it's like, we're seeing how some of these people act. Like, I don't know if you heard about Surviving Sophia.
No. Tell me more.
My friend was telling me this about this yesterday. I saw on Twitter and like TikTok, but I didn't really pay attention. But it's essentially this girl who pretended, I think she's from Toronto or something.
Yeah.
She pretended to...
I might know. Sorry, continue. I'm probably premature here.
She pretended to be Jack Harlow's baby mama.
Oh.
Without any, like, proof or nothing. And she basically, like, scammed these big influencers of, like, thousands and thousands of dollars. Because they thought that she was someone. And she was also saying that she worked in PR. So they just thought that she was someone. And they would... She literally... I think she was living in LA for, like, 2 years. Off of people's...
Oh, I know that one. Wasn't there, like, a huge, like, New York Times article on her about how she, like, did that? She just, like, lived off all these rich people?
I don't know. My friend told me about it. I heard about Surviving Sophia, but I never... Like, I didn't really pay attention to the story.
Yeah. It's crazy. I know what you mean. Like, And just, like, that shows you that people... Yeah, they do present a reality that... unfortunately it does hoodwink a lot of people. Kind of related to that, there's another documentary that I don't know if you heard of, and I actually forgot the name of it, but it basically has these people who are actors who are hired to have fake followings, and they pretty much try to see if they can fool people into thinking they're influencers, like real influencers. And it follows their journey, and that was a really interesting documentary because it talks about how like I think some of them just realized they couldn't do it anymore. But yeah, it's just about like how, yeah, there's a stigma against influencers. Like, are they even like, are they just buying followers or are they real? Like,
yeah,
a lot of things.
The thing is, from my understanding, because like this is my friend explaining this to me and I was like in shock. They didn't even like fact check her, didn't check her Instagram to see like if any of what she was saying was true. So they just like, they just like believed this girl, and like she made these people think that they got signed by a record label, and so she'd be like the record label and then someone else like exchanging through emails. Like, she created multiple emails, like exchange, like, it was a crazy story that like I'm like, is this even real? Like, ain't no way. But my friend, she brought up an interesting point. She said that like these influencers were so like, again, I don't know who these influencers are. This is her telling
me. Airheaded, maybe?
Well, they were so, like, focused on the fact that she was so-and-so's or associated with this big-ass celebrity that they didn't even, like, take the time to, like, make sure that what she was saying was actually backed up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So it was just, like, it's sad that they, like, lost all this money because of this girl. But, like, at the same time, it was just, like, you were so focused on that, like, numbers and like she knows this person, like potentially this can advance my career. I don't know what they were thinking about that, like they did not take the time to fact check the girl.
That brings us to another one. Do you remember the Fire Festival? What was it called again? That festival?
I think it's Fire Fest.
Fire Fest, right? All the people believed that it was an amazing festival because these big celebrities posted their like green square or whatever square, and everyone believed that because the celebrities endorsed it that it must be good, and then all these people got thrown into a nightmare because of that.
Like it's insane. It's literally insane. So like in that perspective, I get the stigma because like
totally
we've definitely seen like how money and fame and like people's obsession with it kind of like blinds them in a way. But at the same time, I'm like, that's also what my friend was saying, because she's also a business owner, and she's like, sometimes I see like she has like brand ambassador for her business, and sometimes she sees how much work they put into their content that she does, and she's like, there's no way that I'd be able to do that, like,
mm-hmm.
you know. So yeah. It's I think it's, I guess, for the consumer's perspective or the brand perspective to kind of gauge and see how people yeah. act to see if that aligns with your
exactly
vision.
Yes. Speaking about all this, that reminds me of a coworker of mine who is a very like humorous guy, let's just say. He's a bit older, so he does have a lot of like hesitations about my career choice, and he was actually the guy who hired me in my last job, so he didn't want me to leave, let's just say. He was yeah. one of those people who were like, why are you doing this? And he, throughout the years I've known him, would always send me these really like terrible articles about influencers doing terrible things, and he has that sense of humor though, so I never took it like personally.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd always be like influencers asking small business owners for free stuff like food, like mm-hmm. restaurants, and like saying, oh, I have like 800 followers, I'll post the story, can I have like a free meal, like that kind mm-hmm. of thing. Very cringy. Yeah. And I would just like laugh, and then I would like honestly just explain to him that I don't do that kind of thing, and I like mm-hmm. obviously show him what I do. He's not even on social media, so like he doesn't really like have the opportunity to look at my stuff. Mm-hmm. But I would explain to him what I actually do and how I would never actually do something like that unless the company wanted me to work with them. Mm-hmm. And I would probably prefer to support them and buy from them and just support them by promoting them as well on social media than just asking for free stuff. That's just like not who I am as a person and would not align with my values as mm-hmm. a person and like integrity, right? And I think my biggest thing is just like, even though a lot of those stigmas exist, we can change that around by one step at a time, like one person at a time. And I think mm-hmm. like my coworker, I was able to eventually convince him that not all influencers are like idiots in other words, who just care about fame and getting free stuff. So I think the best thing we can do is just be a new breed of influencers, right? And I think that I actually follow a lot of influencers who are like that, who I admire and who I actually inspired me to become like sustainable and all these things. And I think that's why I see another side to content creation that maybe a lot of people don't, who don't follow influencers like that. And I think it's just up to us to hold that torch and just like show the world that content creation isn't those things. It's like it can be so much more.
No, for sure. I agree with you. It's kind of the same thing as that. Like, there's like an ick that I get sometimes when I tell people that I'm like a creative or I work in the fashion industry. Like, cause like you feel sometimes people's energy shift and you're just like, like, damn, like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, that's just what I do, but it's not. But again, like, I get it because the fashion industry is a pretty vain industry and it's known to be just like a mean industry. Mm. So I've definitely had people be like, when they know I'm going to be, I've literally had so many of my friends that like when I first met them and they realize what I do and who I am,
mm-hmm.
when they know I'm going to be the next event that they're going to go to, they like force themselves to dress better just so that I can like notice their outfit. But mm-hmm. I'm just like, you don't have to do that. Like, most of the time I look like a crazy person because mm-hmm. I'm not dressed up every day. It's not my yeah. thing. I just yeah. dress people once mm-hmm. in a while, you know what mm-hmm. I mean. So you kind of talked about your transition and everything, but how did you even get into content creation?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I think I actually started blogging like a long time ago, maybe even like 10 years ago. And that was when the OG blogs were like a big thing. And I would follow like my favorite bloggers and I'd be like, new blog posts. Oh my gosh. And this was like before Instagram was a thing. And then slowly Instagram became a place where you just post random photos. It was not like curated in any way. And I wasn't into Instagram yet. I kind of eventually got into it, but not like that. And I would take pictures of my outfits and I would like write a little thing and it'd be like a diary. And honestly, it was really fun. But after a while, I just grew out of it and it actually started to slowly like be less important, right? Like blogs are now kind of more secondary in general. Like I think that they're great still, but they definitely are less bite-sized, and a lot of people just want bite-sized content now. But I think after a while, I just gone to the corporate world. That's where it happened. So once again, I lost touch with my creative roots when I was sucked into the corporate vortex. And I did take outfit photos. Like it was another like, because I just love style, right? I would not say I'm like amazing fashionista, but I do love style. And I would always be that person being like really extra on the branch, the bank branch. And I get my coworkers to take photos of me, and it was like a joke, like a running joke that like Debbie needs her photo taken. They're like, run. And then but that was just my personal Instagram account, and I wasn't by any means a legit blogger at all. And there were, when I got to my next job, I actually had a lot of time compared to my previous job. My previous job was with TV Canada Trust, and it was very, very stressful and busy, and I worked overtime all the time. The next job was literally twiddling my thumbs in an empty office, and I had like barely anything to do. So I knew I had to do something productive, and I had a friend who did do like creator stuff, and she had about 8,000 followers, and I thought to myself, hey, I could do that too. I'm gonna, and then I decided to start a new account, and this was like in October 2017, I actually remember, and I just opened a new account, thought of the new name, and decided I'm just gonna like start a fresh page and see what comes of it. And I just want to be like, and I think before my previous account, I never wrote anything for captions, but then this is when I started to write like longer captions, and because I wanted to get back to my roots of writing. I forgot to mention that at the beginning, but I love to write, and that was actually one of my dream careers, to be a writer. So I thought to myself, this could be a great way to just start writing again, even if it's short form. And that was a big reason for me starting this account. And eventually it morphed into, okay, I want to share style too. And for many years, it was just like, for maybe 2 years, it was like style, really. And it wasn't anything too, like, I wouldn't say there was anything too substantial about what I was sharing. It was just like my life. And, but people seemed to like it well enough. And it wasn't until like, obviously 2020, where I started to be a lot more intentional about what I was sharing, and to be a lot, to stand up for what I believe is right. But like, yeah, it's been a long journey, but it started off with that, like that new, job where I just had nothing to do. I just had free time.
And how did you come up with the name The Stylish Wordsmith?
Oh, I guess that was basically just a combination of me liking style and liking words. So I've always been a bookworm since I was young, and I also like to write. So I thought, okay, what's a thing that I could make up? And that was what I came up with.
By the way, guys, The Stylish Wordsmith is her Instagram. And I think, like, I remember seeing your ads. I think I saw, like, one of your posts, and I never really saw your, like, full feed. And I just followed you because I thought, like, The Stylish Wordsmith, like, that just sounds so cool. I honestly think that's why I followed you.
Thank you.
I really think that was it. I think I just probably saw a photo, and I was like, The Stylish Wordsmith, like, shit, this is... Because I like when people come up with clever names, and it was like so perfect, because then like you ended up being a blogger, and you're a fashion blogger, so it just works out. Have you ever thought about writing a book?
So that's interesting. I think that I've toyed with that idea for many years, because I'm not sure if I like had what it takes, but to be honest, my older brother, he's a great writer, and he won a CBC Nonfiction's Writer Prize like last year, and he's writing a book, and it's about our family memoir. So it definitely has inspired me to think, should I write something too?
Yeah.
And I don't know yet. He's actually going like the more traditional route of like actually getting published at like a house, but maybe I'll do the non-traditional route. And my best friend, who owns a sustainable planner company called Hemlock and Oak, she actually is also an artist and creative all around, I think you can relate. And she's also writing a fantasy novel. And I'm supposed to be like her editor and just like help her edit it when she's done. But I am like surrounded by these people writing books. So I'm like, it's definitely made me think about it. I know that if I did write a book, it'd probably be nonfiction. I don't know if I could do a fiction because like I have read, I'm such a fan of fiction that I feel like I'm not up there yet. Like the imposter syndrome maybe, but like I don't know if I could do it. I feel like I would have to write what I know. So like nonfiction. Yeah.
But I feel like you writing a book would be so on brand.
That's so true.
It would be so on brand with the stylish wordsmith. It could even be like your book title. Like it's so on brand. I know for sure I want to write a book one day. I already have the title of the book. I just don't know what it's going to be about.
Hey, that's the start. That's the start. I don't have any title. I think that if I were to write a book, it would obviously be about my journey as like this creator and like all I don't even know where it's going to end up yet. So I don't feel like the story has fully developed for the book, but maybe in a couple years when I've have a more solid idea of what I'm going to be doing with the rest of my life, that kind of thing, I will I will have more of an idea.
No, for sure. A lot of creatives have multiple side hustles and are not just doing one thing. So are you doing multiple things or are you just doing content creation solely?
So kind of like some creators that I follow, I do have multiple like incomes, but the main one is collabs. So the main one is campaigns with brands, but on the side I do social media management for my best friend's company, and I think that's the only one I'll ever do because even that takes a lot out of me and I really enjoy it, but it's just like so much to add on top of my usual tasks for my own page. So I don't mind that because she is like very forgiving and she really just like is very sweet, and I don't feel like I have to like hide when I'm feeling like I'm overwhelmed with work. So that's one, and they pay me very well, but like they actually are doing so well that I'm very lucky. They might like eventually make it more viable income for me down the road. So I'm very pleased about that. The other one just has been like mentorships, like I think you know about those. That has pretty much been on a like a new endeavor, and I really enjoyed it, but I do feel like I will have to streamline it for the next round because I had 10 mentees for my last mentorship. And while that was great, I think it was like too much where like I had like so many things I had to prepare while I was doing my other campaigns. And I might have to cut that number in like half for next time. And and like I actually have like a wait list of people who really want to be in my next batch, so I don't know how I'm gonna break the news that I'm only gonna take like 5 people next time. But I think they'll survive. It's not like the end of the world, but that's like another side stream. So but the main one is brand collabs for me because I have been very fortunate that I have a steady stream of campaigns, and the main ones lately, as I mentioned, have been from an influencer platform where they send me campaigns that are like suited for me. And then I submit a proposal, and it's by no means like a done deal. I have to wait for the brand to like review my profile and then they decide to accept me or not. But I have had good success with that lately.
Yeah, because I feel like a lot of, at least even me, like some people don't even know there's so many other things that I do apart from styling, just because like for one, I'm the type of person, I get bored quickly, like very quickly. That's why I like I can't get through shows. I just get tired of the storyline. I get tired of the characters. I can barely get through books because I just get bored of it. So I need to do multiple things. So besides just styling and creative direction, sometimes I'll do event coordination. I'll write for other platforms.
Very cool.
I've recently started doing graphic designs for some people. So it's like I think it's important for as well for like as a creative to try different ventures, because then like when you go back to your own main thing, you kind of come with like a fresh set of eyes.
Totally.
Do you feel like that's the same, or like
yeah,
is that something different for you?
I think so. I feel like my managing my friend's social media account has had some great effect on my own like page, because I've realized that, hey, the things that I do for my own page also can work for small business, but I do have to tweak things. And it also gave me experience where I can like actually say I've had experience with managing small business accounts. And if mm-hmm. small business owners come to me for advice, I actually feel like I know what I'm saying. And that's why some of my mentees were small business owners as well. So mm-hmm. I do feel like that endeavor where my friend just told me, hey, just try it out, see if you like it or not. And I was like, and then I decided to just do it. I feel like that was really, really worthwhile. And I think another thing that was interesting, I already mentioned that I wanted to be a writer, right? And my dream was to be like a magazine writer or like a newspaper writer. And I think over the years, I actually realized I don't, because mm-hmm. I realized that it probably wouldn't be as fun as I think it would be. And I had to pitch ideas and then they wouldn't like it and like this and that, right? And you have to mm-hmm. format it very specifically. And the other day I actually got an offer from a very well-known local newspaper or magazine newspaper. Mm-hmm. And it's not done deal or anything, but they actually asked if I would be interested in like writing for them. But as a blogger. So yeah. It's so funny that those two worlds have collided for me, where I tried to apply for those type of jobs in the past and never got them. But now because mm-hmm. I have forged a new path for myself as a content creator, I might actually have that opportunity that I couldn't get before. You never know where life takes you.
No, exactly. That's so true, because I remember the person who I will always credit her for, like, my, like, I've always written, but like that conversation kind of like opened my eyes to like a whole different mm-hmm. world and kind of like triggered my writing bug even more. Her name is Maya. Mm-hmm. Maya spoke on Instagram. People, anyone who knows me knows that I will talk about this woman like to anyone who will hear, because mm-hmm. I just think she's like amazing. First time I meet her, I was writing for this platform and I was writing mm-hmm. article about her events. So before pandemic, she used to throw these spoken word events called Tell 'Em Girl. It's my mm-hmm. first time going. I reached out to her. I heard about the events. I just wanted mm-hmm. to come and see what it was like. Mm-hmm. Come in and I present myself, whatever. We have like a quick little conversation and she says that God created the universe with words. Mm-hmm. So what can we create with the words that we share? And I was like, dude, what the heck? Like, it just like light bulbs, everything. So every time I write, I think about that. Like, what am I creating in when I'm writing, right? And I mm-hmm. feel like, you know, there's more vain things to write about, you know, or like you can write poems, you can write something that's more from the heart, whatever it is. But you are creating something. You're creating something that someone might want or need to hear, right? So I think there's so much power in the art that we create in general, but like writing is like one of the things that I've always like felt so attracted to. Mm-hmm. I see art as a very spiritual thing. Mm-hmm. So I know that you talk about meditation and these types of things. How does mm-hmm. your spirituality kind of relate to things that you create and your creativity mm-hmm. in general?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I definitely feel like having that space for meditation or even my daily devotions and prayer and stuff like that, I definitely feel like it empties my mind, but it definitely calms my mind from the silly little things of every day that don't really matter in the long run. And it gives me a lot of perspective and it tells me, hey, like, that's not what matters. That the fact that you didn't get your like workout done in time or like you didn't do this or that, that isn't what matters in the long run. It gives me perspective to realize that, hey, like, you just need to focus on taking care of yourself and like expanding on those creative things that really fulfill you as a person. I definitely feel like, I'm not sure. Can you reiterate this question again? Sorry, I'm not sure if I like answered it properly.
So I guess for more context, the other day I was having a conversation with someone and we were talking and I was telling him how I realized that styling has been a very healing thing for me, because I grew up in a very religious environment. And so mm-hmm. there was things that I couldn't explore because it was just like, no, like this is what you're supposed to look at. Anything outside of that is against the values, right?
Yeah.
So when I started styling, I would put things onto people thinking that, well, this looks really cool, but I would never wear that. But now looking back, I'm realizing that part of me or part of my inner child kind of wants to explore the style or have that like expression of self, but I still don't feel safe to do that with my own self, if that makes sense. So it's easier to do it than someone else, right? So I guess the question is kind of like, how does your spirituality, maybe like your healing journey or just like your mental health in general kind of impacts your work, or how does your work impact that side? Or how do you connect with like your inner child? There's any like relation between those two worlds?
I think the beginning of the year, like I mentioned before, I took a lot of time to do that, a lot of time to step back and kind of say like to myself, what do I want out of my life? And I think that I've done a lot of progress over this past year. And I think it comes down to basically being creative and being somewhat successful, or if not just like making a good living from being like self-employed, not working for big corporations, and also helping others just whenever I can. And also I think a big one for me was to realize that like I just love being in nature. I like the city, but only for so much. And I'm just like, the other week I went for a getaway in Whistler, a very like natural place, right? And it made me realize, holy shit, like I need to just be like, my goal is to like earn enough money to own a place like by a lake. And like, while I'm not a hermit, I do feel like I have an introverted side and I need that time to just be alone and just like recharge myself in nature. So those are some things that I reconnected with a lot, because as a child, I definitely was a lot more introverted. And I think I used to just read and be like immersed in these adventures that were far away from home because my parents are very strict. And so I definitely feel like I reconnected with a lot of that over the past year when I had time to myself and I wasn't rushing around everywhere for work or for like parties and stuff.
Yeah, for sure. You know what's funny? Because I've noticed like whenever you post like when you're in nature on your page, there's usually like a river. There's always like a source of water. And I remember there was like a weird obsession that I had about like chakras, and I was researching about it. And turns out that your sacral chakra, which is your creativity, responsible for creation and pleasure and sex, that chakra is often attracted to water. So maybe like you being aligned with your chakras is kind of what, like there's that attraction to water and wanting to be there, and also the color orange, because you know how when you're watching a sunset or sunrise, oftentimes the primary color is orange. Apparently those things are kind of related to your chakra and all that stuff, which is very interesting. So I think there's always something that's very there's always a link between the things that we're kind of attracted to at the moment and the things that we're creating or how we're creating or whatever. So that's why I like to ask people like, what's their link to their spirituality versus their creativity. I also had a question for you, because I feel like, you know, I think the content creation industry, and maybe I might be wrong, specifically in fashion, is very white dominated. How is it like to be a minority, a visual minority in this field?
Yeah, that is something that definitely came to light over the past year or two. And I think in general, it is frustrating when you do realize that certain brands prioritize like white influencers or creators or even models over like the others, and the others are just an afterthought. And it became glaringly obvious after BLM, and a lot of people started to really evaluate brands. And while it's like it honestly swung the pendulum too harshly sometimes, but they did have some points, right, where it kind of opened my eyes to that. And there was actually even a brand where they I don't know if I can mention them, but they were like a swimsuit kind of brand, and a lot of influencers worked with them. And they sent me an email saying, hey, we'd like to work with you. And they said it would be paid. So I was like, oh, cool. And then eventually, like, seriously, maybe an hour later, the same person sent me another email saying, oh, sorry, it's not paid. Sorry about that thing, but we still like to work with you. Mm-hmm. And I was like, not interested because it wasn't paid. So I just thought that was the end of that. And then I go onto my social media and there's a girl who, like a black blogger from the States, I think Seattle. She's very sweet. Her name's like Sequins and Sales. And she's like the sweetest girl ever. And she was very vocal during BLM. And she was ranting about the same company because she knew that they had been paying like white influencers like quite decently.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't paying her. And even though she knows that she had just the right same amount of following and engagement as the others, it was just like, and then if you looked at their feed, they were all like white models, just like, it was like barely, there was like no minorities on there.
Mm.
So it seemed like after BLM, they were doing the they were trying to add some minority faces into their roster. Mm-hmm. Without paying them. She said that it wouldn't have been as bad if they would paid her, then she would have been happy to help, right? And then I actually ended up calling out the brand too.
Mm-hmm.
Because I showed her, hey, the same thing happened to me. They didn't want to pay me. And she was like, oh my God. And she like restored my thing. The brand ended up like DMing me, but not mm-hmm. her. And they said, oh, we'll pay you.
Oh.
Yeah. And I was like, no. I was like, first off, the things didn't even really align. I didn't think they were my style, first off. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't even interested on that regard. But hearing about what happened, I was like upset, right?
Yeah.
And when they did say they would pay me, I was like, no, I'm not taking your money. Like you're, I don't know. I just like, it was a bit tainted already.
Mm-hmm.
But that was like an instance of like, wow, I guess it does seem like they don't want to pay minority influencers. So
I've heard of so many stories like that, that like some minority influencers, black influencers kind of picked up on the fact, or even like plus size influencers, that's also another thing.
Yeah,
a lot of them like started to pick up on the fact that some brands will pay certain influencers but would not pay them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like so messed up because it's, you're reaching out to these people, and oftentimes it's not like they're reaching out to them, you're reaching out to these people. Clearly they have a value, and clearly like you need them, whether it's for them to be a token or not, like you still need them. Like, why would you not pay them? You know what I mean? Like, it's just insane.
Yeah.
It's like,
I was very shocked about it too. And now it has made me more careful about people I work with. And that's why a lot of times I do tend to work with like sustainable and ethical brands, because while they're not perfect and you have to do a lot of research to make sure that they're actually doing what they say, they tend to be like more genuine people in general.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm even willing to do gifted collabs with them if I believe in their product, I believe in their brand and what they're doing, and I would like support them without payment. So it's companies like that company that I mentioned that I am just like done with in general. And like, I just am a lot more, I feel like my eyes were opened a lot after that incident.
No, for sure. I totally understand why. We kind of spoke about like the stigma and all these things kind of on this consumer front, but have you ever kind of came into contact to with people that were in the fashion industry that kind of had a stigma about what you were doing?
I guess like I haven't been in contact with too many like fashion industry people in general. Like, I would attend some those events, right? Like the Vancouver Fashion Week, which is nothing. It's not very established, let's just say.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that I haven't really been in contact with too many. I think my main like events that I attend are like usually PR events where there are other influencers, and that's a whole nother like thing. But I don't think I have as much contact with like fashion industry creatives. It's more like brands directly or other influencers.
Yeah, because I'm really curious to know, and the influencing side is such a new thing. on a perspective of some jobs that have been in the fashion industry for so long, mm-hmm. I feel like there's like a weird like where it's not like it's like people are not trying to like be married together, like it's yeah. it feels like clicky, and already the fashion industry in general feels kind of clicky to me sometimes. Mm-hmm. That might just be me, but like even some people who've been in it for longer versus people who are just starting out, like there's it feels kind of clicky yeah. sometimes. So I'm like wondering like how does the influencer side feel about that, because I feel like I've talked to other people who are in the fashion industry, and like I've had those conversations, but I've not really had that conversation with someone who is more on the influencer side. I'm not trying to instigate yeah. anything, but I'm just saying want it to be more like
yeah. I could definitely see maybe you having a hand in that, because you have a foot in each world, let's just
yeah.
say. My main contact with like the fashion industry is more the designers themselves, so like the small Canadian small business owners who are designing their own clothing and making them themselves, and obviously they are the ones reaching out to me, so they have a very positive like view of
mm-hmm.
Of influencers who are actually genuine, who aren't like yeah just doing it for free stuff. They are actually like believe what they said, and I think they follow me for a while, and then they see what I do, and then they reach out and say, hey, I would like to work with you, right? So that's my personal experience, is very positive because it's very limited. It's not like the fashion industry like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
My take on it is that I do know that when bloggers first became a thing, they were definitely not looked kindly upon by the fashion industry, because yeah. back then it used to be so exclusive. It was so like only like celebrities or very like rich people could be part of that world, or like creatives, right?
Yeah.
Who are like in designers and stylists like yourself. And then these bloggers come in who are just have a very popular blog, and then suddenly they get front seats at like the
yeah.
show. And I think there was like those beginning, was her name like Tabby or something? What was her name? Anyways, there was this, like those bloggers, the OG bloggers, like the very first ones who were very popular.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the ones who changed the industry, because suddenly all the designers realized that, hey, this girl has a lot of influence, and she actually is super popular of all these like consumers that we otherwise wouldn't have access to.
Yeah,
through
for
the
sure.
internet. So that's when they started realizing, oh, we better like start prioritizing bloggers. But it took a long time. And I'm not surprised at all that fashion industry people today still have some of that. Lingering
sure.
feelings like that. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But like the fashion industry, like it's, I say all the time, it's vain. Like that's just mm-hmm. the best way that I can describe it. Like even back in the days, like people didn't even know that celebrities had stylists.
Mm-hmm.
Like now it's like you know that like Zendaya is styled by Law or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know that Yara Sahidi is styled by Jason Bolden. So it's like back in the days, these people, like you didn't know who they were, or like you would know like the really big like white stylist that I think it's just interesting to see how the industry is changing, how the influencers have kind of changed the industry. Mm-hmm. And how now it's like you guys are a point of contact between the industry that's super inaccessible and the consumers, right? Like that's how I see you guys being that point of contact, where it's like if people in the industry pay attention to you guys, they'll really know like what the consumer wants and what they're looking for, especially like fashion influencers, and what for example like the shopping experience is, right? Because you guys have to share that to the consumers. So I think you guys have an important role, and I'm glad that a lot of people are realizing that you guys have an important role, and I'm glad that you guys yourselves are realizing that you guys have an important role in the industry.
Definitely. I think it's slow progress, but we're getting there, and I think that even in the last few years the Canadian industry has gotten so much more established in terms of paying influencers for their work, and I feel like it's only going to get better. Like at first, a few years ago, if you'd asked me if I ever wanted to do content creation full time, I'd be like, hell no. I'd be like, so stressed getting paid, right?
Mm-hmm.
But wow, how since then, the way that the industry has developed, has really changed my mind about that. So I feel like it's going to get better. Yeah.
No, I think the industry is definitely changing, and I think like people are starting to pay attention to what they have in their own backyards, right? And people are starting to pay attention to the brands that are here. Like, there's so many amazing brands in like within our own circles, and I feel like we have possibility to grow that that industry bigger, and as big as the European side or like the American side.
Sorry, I think he thought we were done. Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. I have one last question before we go. What is Debbie doing in 5-10 years? Like, what's your perfect life in 5-10 years?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I have thought about this a few times too. I think, like we mentioned, I would be interested in thinking about writing a book, but we'll see. Another one was maybe having some sort of like company in my own, like agency. I'm not sure what it would do. It might be like social media management, or it might be something like more holistic. It might be like more I'm not sure yet. Like, but I know that I feel like I could do that.
Yeah.
So she says my friend has her own company now and she's doing great. She really inspires me a lot in that respect. And also I want to have enough money. And this might be a pipe dream in Vancouver, but have enough money to have like a house in nature somewhere.
Yeah.
Like I mentioned, by a lake. Because when I went there and I was like, oh my gosh, this would be my dream to like live by the lake. And I like the city too, but the obviously ultimate dream was to have both. That's probably not going to happen unless I somehow make it really big, but that's the dream.
No, I think you can make it. I definitely think you can make it. Would you stay in Vancouver?
Yeah, I think I will maybe go to the outer parts of Vancouver that are much cheaper, but like I think I'd stay in BC.
I would love to go there and visit whenever I come down.
You definitely should. I would definitely be your tour guide.
That would be so fun. Guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode. Thank you for being here and having and taking your time of your day to talk to me and have a conversation. Where can we find you?
Well, you can find me on Instagram, obviously. Everything's the same, guys. So it's the Stylish Wordsmith on Instagram. And I just started TikTok, and it's much more about my local adventures and some IG tips too. And I also have Pinterest, also the Stylish Wordsmith, and I have a blog, also the Stylish Wordsmith, where I share a lot of blogging tips and stuff. So those four platforms.
Yeah, so we'll have everything in the show notes, so it'll be a lot easier for you guys to find her. As for us, you can find us at the Fashion Fopa Podcast on Instagram. You can find me at King Bernie on Instagram and everywhere else. And you can find Yasmin, who isn't here, but she'll be here next time, on at Yasmin Isaya. Everything will be in the show notes. And have a good evening, day, whatever you're doing. And don't forget to leave us a review and share this episode with someone you love. Or someone you don't like, that's fine.
Thank you guys so much for listening in on this episode.
We hope you enjoyed it, and you can find us on all platforms at the Fashion Fopa Podcast.
And find us individually at Yasisaya on Instagram.
And King Bernie with two E's at the end on Instagram. Everything will be linked in the show notes below. Make sure to
subscribe
and give us a review.
And we'll see you guys on the next one.